Right.
Okay. All right. So our topic today is the obligatory Maruf. I see Howard has his Indians hat on. Okay. All right. The Guardians. So Parshas Vayetze has the pasuk Vayifgab Makom Vayalen Sham that Yaakov gets to that place and he sleeps there and it's an encounter with the divine. And according to the tradition, Ein Pigiyah Ela Tfilah, that what did he do there? He davened Maariv. That of the, in the Gemara in Brachos 26b, which gives the origins of the various prayer services, one of the versions says Avot Tfilo Tiknum, the ancestors, the forefathers established the prayer services. So this is a good week then to speak about the historical evolution of Maariv. Well, the idea that the forefathers established it.
Could you just
Would...
wait? Could you just understand the Midrash in the first place? Well, ain't pigiu without what is it? Without
Ein pigiyah ela tefillah.
how do we understand that?
That whenever the verbal root pei gimel ayin appears in the Bible, we should think that it connotes some kind of petitionary prayer.
Oh,
I
okay.
mean, it doesn't really, but I mean, there are plenty of times where it can mean a lethal assault on somebody.
Correct.
But so that's the Gemara. So the fact that the Talmud says that Yaakov's founding instituting of the Maariv is on par with Yitzchak and Mincha and Avraham and Shachris would lead one to believe that all three prayer services are of equal legal standing, and that one should not be identified as somehow more discretionary or less important. And yet, the trouble is that if you go to the other piece of that sugya of tefillot keneged tamidim tiknum, the tefillot were established to correspond to the daily perpetual offerings, the tamid sacrifice. Well, how many are there every day? Only two. So, on what basis will the Amoraim try to justify Maariv within the construct of tefillah keneged tamidim tiknum? So the answer is that they'll say, "Evarim upedarim b'dalku ba'erev krim halachim kol ha'layla," that the limbs and the fats which were not consumed by the fire during the daytime would be consumed by the fire all night long, and the Maariv corresponds to that. But that is not as compelling as an obligatory sacrifice. So if we're going to have a notion of Maariv being discretionary, it more is along the lines of the Keneged Korbanot rather than Keneged Avot. Well, where's the first piece of the puzzle to say that Maariv is discretionary? So we look in the Mishnah in Brachot, chapter 4, Mishnah Aleph, where it says, Tfilat HaShachar is until Chatzot. Rabbi Yehuda says it's until Dalet Sha'ot. Tfilat HaMincha ad HaErev, you could have Mincha until the evening. And then, Tfilat HaErev ein la keva. The evening service has no keva. If you had to define keva, what would you say?
Set
What would I
time.
review?
Permanence.
No
Permanent.
set time.
Okay, so if it weren't for the fact that this Mishnah had been talking about the time frame for tefillah, those of you who gave the answer of, well, the time frame for Maariv, it's not fixed, you wouldn't be giving that answer. It's only it's a contextual answer that you're offering. But the plain meaning of Ein La Keva, standalone, without any context, would be it has no fixity, meaning it's floating in the luft, in the air, which might be interpreted to mean that you don't really have to do it. It exists as an institution, but it's not binding.
No, but
So,
that's why Maariv is can be all night long, up until dawn, in theory. There is no fixed time.
it happens to be that the two answers come together, so to speak, that the reason why you have such a long time frame to daven is precisely because it's not as halachically significant and therefore demanding. Okay, well, let's go to the Gemara. The Gemara Chaf Zayin Amud Beis says the following: My ain la keva. What is the meaning of it has no keva? If you want to tell me that it means that you could the time frame for davening Maariv is all night long, listening to tefillah then the Mishnah could have said that explicitly. It could have used the words, Kol Halayla, you have all night long to daven Marav. But it doesn't say that. So, Elamayin Lakeba, Kemandamar Tfilas Arvis Rishus. Well, the Gemara here is going to claim that it corresponds to the viewpoint, the Tanaitic viewpoint, that Marav is discretionary, Rishut. The Amrav Yudam HaShmuel, because as Shmuel said, there was a Machlokes Tanoim about the obligatory status of Marav. Rabban Gamliel said, Chova, you must do it. Rabbi Yeshua says, Rishus, discretionary. Amar Abaye, so Abaye says, Halacha Givim Chova. The law follows the viewpoint that it is a Chova, it's an obligation. The Rav Amar Halacha Givim Rishus, whereas Rav says, if we follow the viewpoint that it is discretionary. Okay, so we're going to get to, in a few moments, based upon this sugya, what should we conclude? I mean, in a machlokas Abaye and Rafa, how do we usually paskin?
Abaye.
No. Rafa, except for Yal Kagam. So the Rishonim will say that the fact that Rafa goes for the Rishus means that that side should win. Okay, but I just wanted to show you that there is a machlokas Tanoim, and it follows up with a machlokas Amoroim.
We're assuming that other davenings are actually set, established, and everyone's doing it. I mean, that also is somehow
okay. So whether everyone is doing it is a question that I want to get to shortly, because this talk today is not really a purely halachic talk about the status of Marav, but rather it's a historical analysis of when people started doing Marav and the halachist, the poskim, asserting one way or the other about its binding status will go hand in hand with whether people are actually doing it. Okay,
so I mean, shocked in a idea of davening. I mean, that itself
it's new. It's relatively new when Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Gamliel are talking and discussing what they would like to see happen. Okay, so those who are familiar with the Gemara Brachos know that this machlokis of Gamliel and Yoshua led to a big problem in the yeshiva. What happened? Gamliel wasn't nice to Yoshua. He forced him to stand up. It disrespected him. The Olim couldn't tolerate it anymore. And they deposed Gamliel. They kicked him out of his office as the head of the academy. He went home. And they had to appoint somebody else in his place. And who did they appoint?
Elazar
ben Azariah. Until such time as Yoshua and Gamliel reconciled, and they brought back Gamliel on a 3-to-1 ratio, that Elazar ben Azariah would get one Shabbos and Gamliel would get 3 Shabbosim, or some say 2 Shabbosim and 1 Shabbos. Okay, so in any event, the Gemara offers this discussion about Marav, and then the Gaonim and the Rishonim are going to have to decide, well, do people have to daven? I mean, is it really necessary to daven Marav? And are people doing it? So what other nuggets of information, what other little pieces of information exist in the Shas that might tip us off as to the binding or non-binding character of Marav? So there are a few pieces of information. One is the Gemara Brachas Daf Lamed Amud Beis. So if you look at the source sheet inside, Lamed Amud Beis, Amar Rav, Tav lo hiskil shel Rosh Chodesh Arvis. What happened if you forgot Yale v'yavo at Marav? Who knows? What do? You don't repeat the Shmoneh Esrei. Ein machazirin also. Why? Lefishen mekachin es hakodesh el bayom. Because the Beis Din couldn't declare Rosh Chodesh at night. The Beis Din is only functioning in the daytime. So since tonight, let's assume tonight was the 30th night of the month. Okay, today was the 29th day. Tonight is the 30th night. Well, tomorrow might be the 30th day, but it might be the first day of the next month. I don't know yet, and I can't know yet because Beis Din can't function until the morning. So it could be that it'll be Rosh Chodesh tonight, but I just don't know. If I skip Yalav Yavo, and it turned out that it really was Rosh Chodesh, so should I have to repeat the Shmoneh Esrei? The answer is no, because the night couldn't have been Rosh Chodesh anyway. Even if the next day is, the night before could not have been. Now, what does that tell you about the obligatory status of
Marav? But you can't declare Rosh Chodesh at night.
Correct. Okay, so what does this tell you about the obligatory status of Marav, if anything?
That you're going to have to daven. The only question is, what you're going
to
daven?
Okay, so you could interpret this Gemara to mean that Maariv is obligatory, and if it weren't for the fact that Rosh Chodesh can't be declared at night, we would have made you repeat the Shmoneh Esrei, right? Because you botched it, and you didn't say the required Me'ein HaMe'ora, the insertion for the special occasion. So, obligatory Maariv. You could try to interpret the Gemara that way. However, on the other hand, you could say, yeah, but the Sof Kol Sof, you don't have to repeat it. Which means that even though the Gemara is giving you an answer, it could have also been giving you a different answer of, yeah, Maariv is not obligatory in general. Ah, so what about if this wasn't Rosh Chodesh? What if it was Shabbos? What if you forgot to include something about Shabbos or Yontif in the Maariv? So there's no sugya in the Gemara about that. But the Rishonim assume that since Rosh Chodesh has a sugya and it says Ein Machazir Noso, by implication, Shabbosus Yom Tovim Machazir Noso. And that's only possible if what? If Maariv is obligatory. So that's a way of looking at this sugya. Now let's go to the next piece of the puzzle. This is Gemara Brachas 26b.
What's happening with the initial story with Rebbe's kids coming back from the party? And they say,
so that's not about Tfilas Arvis. That is about Kriya Shema Shalaila.
Oh, right.
And we must make sure to distinguish between the two. We think of Maariv as from Vahu Rachum up until the Kaddish after Aleinu. But that's not what Maariv is. Maariv is just the Shmoneh Esrei. The Kriya Shema is separate, and it has its brachos lefnei lacharei, before and after, but they were only put together at a later time to be somach gudul l'tfila. But really, they're separate institutions. Okay, so the next sugya.
Are we so sure that Maariv in those days meant the Amida? We couldn't somehow stretch it and say, anytime you talk to God at nighttime, you make a mitzvah of davening.
I think the origins of a nighttime prayer service is the desire of human beings to commune with their maker at a dangerous moment like the night when it's dark out, people feel scared. That's the sociological or anthropological basis for Maariv. But when the Talmudic literature talks about Tfilas Erev, it means the Amida. Okay, so the next sugya is Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Tov Elo Ispal Arvis. What happens if you made a mistake and you didn't daven Maariv? So not that you botched the Shmoneh Esrei with some special insertion, you just simply didn't daven. You know, you fell asleep on the couch watching the Met game. It was a long game, you know, and you woke up and it's morning, and you find that they lost to Atlanta. So what do you do? So how do you make up the lost davening? And first, the answer
first,
is
first to start to drink.
Right. Mispalel Shacharis Shtayim. You daven Shacharis twice. So we know the concept of Tashlumin is applied to failure to daven Bishogeg, not Bemezid, but Bishogeg. And it applies Shacharis going into Mincha, Mincha going into Maariv. But does it apply to Maariv going into Shacharis? Well, if you say that it does, and the Sugya says that it does, that might give you the impression that what? That Maariv is obligatory. Because if it wasn't, why would you need any tashlumin? Just, you know, chalk it up to a loss and move on. Okay, so now let's go to the next sugya. The next sugya says, Amar Rav, it's Yoma Pezayin Mad Beis. Tefilas Ne'ila, Hoteres Eshel Arvis. If you daven Ne'ila on the end of Yom Kippur, you exempt yourself from davening Maariv. Now, the Olam would love this in my shul. It means we'd get out 10 minutes earlier at the end of Yom Kippur and go to the Kiddush. But Rav says you don't have to daven Maariv on Motzi Yom Kippur if you daven Ne'ilah. Why? Because you just need one evening time service and you did it, so gunug. Now, Rav Latameh, Rav, according to his own viewpoint, Amar Tzlosi Yaserahi, that Ne'ilah is sort of an extra prayer. And once you prayed an extra prayer, Sulot Tzarach, you don't have to do anymore. So now we ask a question. Rav Hachi, could Rav possibly have said this? Rav himself is of the view that Maariv is discretionary. Something that is discretionary, you never have to find a patur for it. There's an automatic patur for it. There was never a chiyuv. So the Gemara answers, well, he was only speaking relative to the viewpoint that Maariv is obligatory, but for Lishitaso, for his own view, this is a moot point because you never have to daven Maariv. Now, that's not a very compelling answer at all. To say, well, he was talking about the other guy's opinion. No, it says that you can exempt yourself from Maariv if you daven Ne'ilah. So this sounds like you really should daven Maariv. And it's only because of the chesed that the halachists do for you to get to the Kiddush faster at the end of a Tanis that they don't require Maariv. So the Yerushalmi says this. Yerushalmi says it explicitly. Kal hekilu alav mishum taniso shiusheva poter shpon esrei. That they cut you some slack at the end of a long fast, that seven brachot will suffice when you should have said 18 brachot. That Ne'ilah has only seven brachot, your weekday Shmon Esrei has 18, so it's actually a shorter version. Now, really, it's not so short, because Ne'ilah, I mean, the middle bracha of Ne'ilah is fairly lengthy. It probably takes you longer to daven Ne'ilah than it does to feed a daven Maariv on a Tuesday in November, okay? So, but that's the Yerushalmi saying, it's a chesed that's done for you, so you don't have to wait too long. Okay, so all of these sugyas could have been interpreted in a manner that leads towards Tfilas Arvis Chova. Yes, you could try to read them as Rishus, but they lean towards Chova. Now let's go to a Gemara in Shabbos. So the Gemara in Shabbos says like this: Amar Abaye, Hani Chavrin Bavloy, our Babylonian friends, Laman de Amar Tfilas Arvis Rishus, within the viewpoint that says that Maariv is discretionary, Kevin de Sharle Hemnaya, once you undo your belt or your robe, or you're unbuckling yourself. So lomat rechinenlei, we don't force you to go daven. That basically, if you're shutting down for the night and you've taken off your suit, that's it for the night. You don't have to bother putting it back on and davening. Ulamand amar chova matachinenlei. But wait a second. According to the viewpoint that Maariv is obligatory, we would force you to buckle yourself back up and daven. V'hatzvilas mincha. But what about when it comes to mincha, where everyone agrees it's a chova, and yet we say that if you began something before the zman mincha, like a meal or a haircut or something, that you're allowed to continue with the meal or the haircut. You don't have to pause to daven. Amar Rav Yechanina, mishatecha goro. Yeah.
Does that mean that you don't have to daven, or that you don't have to get up to daven, but okay, the chova remains?
Okay, good. So what the sugya ends up doing is turning itself around and to say, well, what we really meant was that now you can continue doing what you were doing, but you should get around to davening later. So, and whether or not that's ultimately the conclusion of the sugya, we'll see in a second. So, hasam lo shchicha shichrus, halcha shchicha shichrus. So the reason why we can be relaxed about letting you do something before you get back to davening at mincha time is because nobody's drunk. But at nighttime, if we allow you to have your evening meal, you'll get drunk and you'll never get around to davening again. So this will be it. This will be it for the night. You won't recover. Alternatively, when it comes to mincha, kevila zimna, the time frame is relatively fixed and short. So maratis v'lasil mipsha, he's nervous about it and he won't want to miss the zman. As opposed to Lila, when you have the whole night, you won't be nervous about it and you'll miss the zman. So everybody who's been to shul with a bunch of Kaddish zuggers know this is true. You know, if it's 5 minutes to shkia and you're still way short of a minion in a small shul and somebody's saying Kaddish with yardside or is in Avelis, they go bonkers. We got to get it in the next 3 seconds or I'm doomed. As opposed to Marava, if it comes in 20 minutes and a half hour, we'll stick around. There's plenty of time. Okay, so this sugya, in any event, gives a more relaxed approach to Maariv. That, yeah, we're not as demanding about it, but we would like you to get around to it. So now, let's go to the Bahag.
What about the idea when people have a chazaka, once they start davening Maariv, do they then become locked into it, as opposed to people maybe who never kind of like took it on regularly?
Okay, good. So the Bahag, you looked at the Bahag, I think, because that's what he's talking about. So Bahag says like this: Ki kamina defilas arvis rishus. When we say, or the Talmud says, and we accept as fact that Maariv is discretionary, hani mili hechad lo kavale tzavli klal. That's only where you never daven Maariv. Avalitzali, but if you've daven Maariv in the past, o kibla alei, or you haven't, but you've accepted upon yourself that you're going to do it, shavale kechova. You have now made it like a chova. Now, not a chova, but kechova. So once it's kechova, then a lot of the halachic minutia that we've just gone over in the last 10 minutes makes a lot more sense. The notion of doing tashlumin, or needing to exempt yourself with nila, or get back around to it after you've had your dinner. All these things make sense if we really want you to do it, and we don't want you to drop the ball. Well, to whom does this apply? To a person who has made it for themselves, like a chova. Okay, now let's go to Rav Amram Go. V'imta yachid, lizgir shel Shabbos b'marav. What happens if you didn't mention Shabbos at night? Machazirin oso. V'afal pi shamanu tov lizgir Rosh Chodesh b'marav. Machazirin oso, even though Rosh Chodesh we would not. B'Shabbos machazirin. So why? Afal gav the kamut spes Shabbos b'shus. Even though marav is discretionary, hani mili hechad lo ba'at salu le'im tachin alei. That's only where you don't want to daven, we won't make you daven. But if you bothered to daven, you better do it right. And since you messed up and did it wrong, then you have to do it again. So this is an interesting idea. It's not like the Bahag saying, if you ever daven marav, you've made it into an obligation. Rather, it's saying that since right now you did daven, you made an attempt, so a flawed davening is unacceptable. So do it right. Do it again, but do it right. Okay. Now let's go to the Otzer Agon. The Otzer Agon has a passage from Shri Ragon. So he's one of the last of the Gonim. Shri Ragon says the following. So, Kuli Amar Ben Lamanda Amar Chova Ben Lamanda Amar Rishus Mitzvah Ninu. Everyone agrees that it's a mitzvah to daven marav. Whether you claim it's a Rishus, whether you claim it's a Chova, everyone agrees it's a mitzvah. Mitzvahs treyam pein havyam minho, but there are two types of mitzvahs. So here we have like a brisker chiddush from a Firagon. Two types of mitzvahs, tzvei dinim and marav. Chova demanda lo avid lo kain ba'avon. So something which is known as a chova is something where if you don't do it, you have an avon, an iniquity, a transgression. You did something wrong, a sin. We know rishus, but there are those which are so-called rishus. Demanda avid le islay sachar, that if you do it, you get reward. It's like if you do chesed and tzedakah, you get a reward for doing chesed and tzedakah. So heaven will reward you.
Like Moshe Feinstein talking about Aliyah?
Mitzvah kiyumit.
Mitzvah kiyumit, good, fine. So, but if you neglect the daven marav, you don't do it, then leis be'avon, you have no aveirah. You just simply lost out an opportunity to gain further reward. So, but in the halachic realm, says Shri Ragon, we have added strength, chizuk, to marav, because kevan the whole Yisrael nehigiba, all of Jewry is doing it. Most Jews don't even know that it's a rishus; they just know that they do it, and they have no idea about its true halachic character. And if you don't do it, you're a poetz geder. You're bursting the fence. And what's the punishment for a poretz geder? Yishchenu nachash. The snake should bite you. Okay? So here, already in Gaonic times, the leading figure of Babylonian Jewry is saying that everybody's davening marav, and nobody even realizes that they don't have to. Okay, fine. So now let's go to the riff.
Is there anything else like that?
If your question is, but is anything else where nope, you don't have to, but we do it, or where we do it, but people don't know they don't have to do it?
Yeah,
the latter. Yeah. Probably a lot of things that are minhagim ba'alma, just customs, but have taken on an outsized role in contemporary Judaism. Where your average Am Haaretz and even your average yeshiva graduate couldn't really tell you the basis for why they do it. They just know we do it.
I mean, it reminds me of when they said, when you say Shema, don't tell anyone. But it means you've learned.
Now let's look at in the riff. So the riff says like this: Tfilas Arvis Rishus, Amar Rav Yehuda Meshbol, Tfilas Arvis. So he quotes the Machlokas of Gamliel and Yehoshua, and then the Machlokas of Abaye and Rava. V'kaimalon the halacha k'Rava. We paskin like Rava in general, and here too that it's a Rishus. Miuhani mili hechad lo tzali leklal. But that's only if you never daven marav. But if you ever did, you've made it into a chovah for yourself. And if you make a mistake, you'll have to repeat. Okay? And then he goes on to quote the Shri Ragon about a mitzvah versus a chovah, and so on and so forth.
Now, why don't you mention the term chazaka? Once you have a chazaka for something, that's what locks you in.
Well, because chazaka is three times. Here we're saying even if you did it once.
Really?
No. Okay, so let's look at some sources that tell us about davening marav in shul. Because it never says in the literature of the Tanoim, not in the Gemara, not in the Mishnah, not in Tosefta, not in the Braisa, that they daven Marav at Shul. They daven Shachris and Mincha, Betzibur, but it never says they daven Marav Betzibur. So let's go to Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi says like this: Hakore Kodem Lachain Lo Yatzei Dechovato. If you recite the Shema before the appropriate time for the Shema of Beshach Becha, then you fulfill no obligation. Im Kein Lemakonos Vesakneses. But if that's true, why do we read the Shema in the synagogue? So Amar Rabbi Yossi, let's say Ein Kodem Bishvilat Seis Lamad Fil Dov Divrei Torah. Rather, we recite the Shema in the synagogue in order to enter into the Shmona Esrei from a state of having studied Divrei Torah. This is a very controversial line in the Yerushalmi. And the scholars debate whether he's talking about Mincha or talking about Marav. Because what do we do at Mincha time? You're supposed to enter into the Shmona Esrei from a state of having read some biblical passage. What biblical passage do we read?
Ashrei,
Psalm 145. But, you know, it could have been anything. It didn't have to be Psalm 145. It could have been Shema Yisrael, Shem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. But if you want to say this is talking about Marav, so here, what we're saying is that you're not davening Marav at an hour when you could be Yotzei Kriya Shema. It's too early. So why are you saying Shema? Answer, just to enter into the Shmona Esrei from a religious state of being, not to be thinking about the stock market or the Mets, but rather to be thinking about God and the Torah. Okay? So, now let's go to a next source. Amar Rabbi Shua ben Levi, Afal pi shekardam kriya shma veis haknesses, mitzvah lekros al mitaso. Even though you read Shema in Shul, there's a mitzvah to read it on your bed. So the Shua ben Levi is the origin of kriya shma lamita, the bedtime Shema. We're not talking about the Shema of the evening time, the mitzvah de oraisa. We're talking about the kriya shma lamita. And what he's saying is, even though you read the Shema in the Shul, do it again. Well, why would you read the Shema in Shul? I don't know. After all, they never talked about davening Marav in the synagogue. So maybe, just maybe, this is talking about the recitation of the Shema before the Amida of Marav. And yes, in Amoraic times, they finally started davening Marav in the synagogue. So these are the two earliest references to Beis HaKnesses and the recitation of something, although not even tefillah, doesn't even explicitly say tefillah, just says Kriya Shema at night.
Which Shemalamita fulfill the requirement tonight?
If you say the full amount, if we paskin that midoraisa you require the first two paragraphs, then you got to say the first two paragraphs. If we paskin you just require the first paragraph, the fine ve'ahavta is good. The minimalist is Rebbe's version of Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, and done. Okay, and nobody says you have to have the third paragraph because tzitzis is not a chi of balayla. So now, one of the questions you have to ask is, why did it become the case that everybody was davening Marav? You know, when the Gaonim say, yeah, everybody's doing it. But if it really was a Rishus, how did it come to that? Well, the answer is, once it started happening in the synagogue and was no longer left to people's own devices to daven Marav at home in their house, so the synagogue davening makes it more likely that people will do it. People are lazy, and if it's at home, they'll skip it. But if you have to go to shul, and it's culturally everybody's going to shul, and they're davening Marav in the shul, well, then it's going to happen that Kuleyama, everybody's going to daven Marav.
Isn't it more likely that they daven Mincha late after work? You daven Mincha, you're there already.
Okay, good, good, good. So now the question is, what about the fact that davening at a very late hour, the hour when you're supposed to daven Marav, is inconvenient? So there's a long article by Jacob Katz, Professor Yaakov Katz, on Marav Bismana, davening Marav at the right time. It's in the book, Divine Law in Human Hands. It costs $40 on Amazon. If you buy one book this Hanukkah for yourself, buy Jacob Katz's Divine Law in Human Hands and read the article about Marav, which he wrote about 40, 50 years ago. It's the best literature on the question of davening Marav and Mincha Marav back to back and Marav before the Zman. So once that became popular, even if it was halakhically dubious to do that, to daven Marav before the Zman, still people were doing it. So that meant what? It was much more likely that an individual would daven Marav because the time now is no longer an obstacle. It's actually quite convenient. So, now, what about the davening of Mincha. So Mincha is at a tough time of the day. After all, you know, you're at work, and you don't necessarily have a minion in your office. What are you going to do? You have to interrupt your activities to commune with God, as opposed to Shacharis before you go to work and Marav after you come home from work. So Mincha is a challenge. The fact that the tour, the Gemara, says L'olam Yehizor B'Tfilas HaMincha, and the tour says you got to be careful about Mincha because it's in the middle of your day, interrupting your day. The implication is that Marav did not have that problem. People were not being negligent when it came to Marav, but they were with Mincha because of the time factor. So we see again another example that although Marav begins as a Rishus, it actually is more popular than Mincha, which was itself a Chova. Okay. Now, are there any remaining features of Marav that give away that it really is a Rishus? And the answer is yes, and it's an obvious one. Tell me what the answer is. There's no Chazaras HaShatz. Why not? Because what is Chazaras HaShatz? Facilitating somebody else's obligation through the Chazan's recitation. But who's obligated? Nobody. Therefore, no Chazaras HaShatz. Okay, so let's look in the Rambam, the bottom of the first page of the handout. The Rambam says...
No one in this room knows how to daven, and therefore they should repeat it for the benefit of those people who don't know how to daven.
Okay, so the Mishnah Berurah will explain that that's not a good enough reason to justify extra brachot. We'll see that shortly. So the Rambam says, Eino chozer v'ispala b'kol ram, arvis, l'fi shen tfas arvis choba, l'ficha l'vrach bracha l'vatala. It would be a bracha l'vatala, a blessing in vain, to do a repetition at Mariv when you're not satisfying anybody's obligation because it's a phantom obligation. It doesn't exist. Okay? Now, let's go to the second page of the handout, to the Chidushi HaRashba. So the Rashba says that in the Machlokas over whether it's a Rishus or a Chova, why is it that we're siding with Rishus? So one of the reasons is because in Machlokas, Abaye and Rava will follow Rava. But another reason is because in a Machlokas between Rav and his colleagues, Rav v'chavei Rav, we paskin like Rav in religious matters, in ritual matters, and we paskin like Shmuel in what? In Mamonis. So in Nezikin, Shmuel is the big winner. In religion, Rav's the big winner. And davening is religion. Okay, so Rav said Tfilas Arvis Rishus. So if you put it all together, we're gonna lean towards Rishus. Moreover, it's Din D'Rabbanan. V'shel sofrim halacha achar hamekil. When it comes to dinim d'rabbanan, and there's a suffix, what do? We go l'kula. So between the Abaye Rava factor, the Rav Shmuel factor, and the Doraisa versus the Rabbanan l'kula factor, all of these are the reasons why we're going to side with Rishus, even though many of the sugyas in the Gemara about Mariv could have leaned towards Chova. Okay.
Although I'll tell you, though, the difference of Israel and America with Shul and Jews and things of that sort. Some people would tell you in America that the shul really is a lot more about business than about religion. But that's a separate share.
That's true. Now let's look in the Beis Yosef. So the Beis Yosef says like this, that the Shliach Tzibur does not repeat Marav, V'siyam l'kasav l'ivrach brachal v'atala, okay? And he quotes the Rashba, he quotes the Gaonim, okay. Okay, if you would daven even one time, you've accepted it upon yourself as an obligation. So if you were able to daven once, it means that you are liturgically competent, and you wouldn't even need the chazan to daven on your behalf anyway. So he says it's like a catch 22. There's no way you'd ever have a scenario of a person being obligated to Marav but not being able to do it, because they only achieved the level of obligation by having once done it. So unless they had amnesia or Alzheimer's and they forgot all their religion or they forgot how to read Hebrew, so then it would never come up. They davened once before. They could daven themselves again. They don't need the chazan to do it on their behalf. Now, the last piece is the Mishnah Berurah. So the Mishnah Berurah says, Afilu ha'idna de kavua chova. Nowadays, we've established Marav as a Chova. He doesn't say Kechova. He says Chova. But a minug, which elevates something to the level of a chova, does not have the power, the juice, the koiches, to burden the congregation with a repetition. So here, it's not an issue of bracha levatala, according to the Mishnah Berurah. It's an issue of tircha detzibur. Is the oilam really interested in sticking around for a repetition of Marav when dinner is waiting at home? They don't want to stick around. They're racing out the door halfway through Aleinu. While can they cover? They're already halfway home. So tircha detzibur, it wasn't going to be that there's a repetition of Marav. So that brings us to the end of the sources. I just wanted to give you a flavor for, you know, how it is that Marav became important in the life of the Jew. It went from being, you know, a second tier kind of davening because it's not corresponding to a tamid. Yes, it corresponds to one of the avos. So that's how it got some power or relevance to itself. But it was clearly less than Shachris and Mincha. But by way of going from a rishus to a mitzvah to a kechova to even a chova, now, if you don't daven marav, you're a poor together, and we kick you out of the religion.
But so, if you had to schedule a dental procedure, let's say, and the time is up to you, and you're going to miss a davening.
So that's an example of where we would say better to miss the marav than to miss the mincha, but you'll probably be able to daven afterwards anyway. You're just questioning whether missing betzibur the mincha versus the marav. And the answer is, yeah, better mincha betzibur. Okay, gentlemen.
Yeah. What about this idea of chova? The chova for mincha and shachrit is midrabbanan, correct?
Yeah.
Right. And now, if I take upon myself mariv, is that more like a chova of a neder, which makes it maybe even deraita?
So I would say no. Because it's a very good question. Because if it was not something that was like a religious ritual, if it was just a personal mishigas of mine that I wanted to do, and I made a solemn declaration of neder, then yes, it's the din d'oraisa that I have to keep my neder. But we're not in the habit of making such declarations about mitzvot. It's a sugi in the Gemara, whether or not you're allowed to make a neder to be Mekayim mitzvahs, because you're mushmi
Yom
HaSinai.
It's not a mitzvah.
Okay, but it's something that the Judaism is encouraging of us. It is a mitzvah, kiyumit at least. So we wouldn't encourage a neder to fulfill it. But if a person made such a neder, you're right. It would have the status of a d'oraisa neder. But no, having just davened a few times and made a chazaka out of it, it's not.
No, but his neder could be he's going to have more kavanah when he davens. He's going
to
try to.
Well, that's like an abstract statement that could be applied to any davening of the day. Lav daf gemarav. So I think it's it doesn't elevate itself to d'oraisa unless you made an explicit neder.
I'd also read that in Islam, they have five davening times to reflect the five davening times that we have, or the three plus the two shmas. There's a shma in the morning, and then there's a shma in the chamar, and then a shma at the end, and they saw that, and they like copied that.
So according to Louis Ginsberg, in his article, in his introduction to the Palestinian Talmud, in his book, Jewish Law and Lore, says that the Muslims copied the Jews, that the Jews daven five times a day and the Muslims copied it. But he doesn't have a footnote on that line. And he's been dead for 70 years, so I can't ask him.
I have a book, Jews in Islam, or rather Islam, something like that, and I have in another room. And that's what it says. Those
it's imitating Yom Kippur.
Right, so Yom Kippur has five tefillos. It's the one time a year that has five tefillos.
Right.
And since they fast all the time by that religion, so it's good for them to copy Yom Kippur.
Yeah.
One other question, not directly related, but indirectly, because you mentioned the question, the minhag of having Mincha Marav together.
Yeah.
Birkot Kriyat Shema.
Yeah.
Are not tefillah, as you said. Tefillah is the Amidah. Right. They are Birkot HaMitzvah.
So it's an interesting question, whether or not they're regarded as Birkot HaMitzvah.
Because the conclusion, what question follows then.
The conclusion among the Achronim is that it's not. Because if it was, there'd be a bracha, al mitzvahs kriyashma. And that's not what we say. These are birkot hoda'ah, generic praises of Hashem, of Ma'ariv Aravim, or Evamo Yisrael. You know, it's nice flowery stuff that are obligatory to say, but not birkot mitzvah. So therefore, since they're not birkot mitzvah, when you say them not at the exactly appropriate hour, it's less problematic. Right.
We also have an effect that's the shuls are combined minyanim, meaning Svardim and Ashkenazim, like we have in the Gap and Shul. And every now and then, some Ashkenazim will run into the Svardim minyan because they'll do like a late mincha and an early marav.
Yeah.
And it's very convenient.
Bruce, now, Bruce, there are Ashkenazim that do it too.
No, I said there are Ashkenazim.
No. There are Ashkenazi minyanim without Svardim that do it also.
Ah, well, but in the States, they do it out of like a need.
Well, the German Rishonim, the Tosfos and then the Rosh and so on, that was the justification for the off-hour minyan, of the impossibility of convening a quorum multiple times later in the day. And that formed the basis of the American practice in the summer times, sometimes in some shuls every night of the week, and in some places just Friday night. But Friday night, there are other halachic justifications for davening Maariv early, but on a random Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday, when you don't have that further justification, it really was just relying upon, you know, a Shas Hadchak Gadol from Germany from the year 1200.
I'm just wondering if it's okay for Ashkenazim to bop into that Sephardi minyan because it's convenient when it's really it's not the right time. I mean, let's face it.
You want Jewish unity. It's always good. All right, guys, take care. A good Shabbos.
Thank you.
Shabbat shalom.
And don't miss Maariv. Anyone who didn't do Maariv,